Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm Pat Sloan, and the first person I'm going to talk to is an amazing quilter, and I've been lucky enough to meet her in person. Thelma Childress, she writes at Cupcakes and Daisies. She does award-winning quilts, and she does quilts to cozy up with on the couch. She's full-spectrum quilter. I love her work so much that I thought it'd be fabulous to talk to her for a few minutes today. So thanks, Thelma, for being here.
Oh, I'm just thrilled to be included in your show. Thanks for asking me, because I'm just a quilter. I'm someone that listens to these shows. So just being asked, it's honestly just a thrill.
I know, you were so funny when I wrote you. You're like, yeah, I'm just a quilter. I want people to know that. And I'm like, yes, we are.
Yeah, I'm not trying to sell a book or anything or fabric. I just sit at home and quilt like everybody else, probably the majority of the people that are listening today.
I know. I think that is just amazing because, like I said, you do a full spectrum of levels of quilts. Let's say I would call it levels of quilts because you challenge yourself, but then you also make amazing quilts just for fun, just to use. How long have you been quilting, Thelma?
I've been quilting about 12 years now, and believe it or not, it's just a fluke that I'm even a quilter, because I wandered into a quilt shop just looking for someone that could mend an old quilt for me.
Oh, no.
And they talked me into taking a beginner quilt class. And once I took that class, I was hooked, because I can remember my grandmother was a quilter, but she used scissors and cardboard, and I knew I didn't want that. And I knew how to sew, but once my daughter no longer needed Halloween costumes, I didn't really have anything to sew. But after that beginning class and then learning how much sewing had changed since my grandmother's time, I was hooked. And now I'm retired and I sew nearly every day.
Oh, well, isn't retirement awesome?
As long as... Yes.
Yeah, I know. Someday in my future, I'll see that. So one of the things that we talked about is that you come from a math background, and so you told me your favorite part of quilt making is the math. I you know, you're not the only one, but I wouldn't say that you're the majority who love math. What did you used to do?
Yes, I'm a retired accountant, so math is just in my blood. So for me, the color and the creativity aspects of quilting, those are what come hard for me, because math is easy. Math is a sure thing. I can rely on math, but sometimes you just don't know what you're going to get when you combine different pieces or different fabrics.
Now, are you one of those quilt makers who has to count all the pieces in your quilts?
Of course, I am. Yes, I track all the quilts that I've ever made, and when I finish a quilt, I always count how many pieces. And so far, my all-time high is a quilt that has 6,547 pieces, and it's in a quilt that's only 50 by 59 inches. So that was really a lot of pieces and a pretty small quilt.
Oh, my goodness, Thelma, that's... That's a lot. Now, you are my envy with your organization for how many quilts you've done, because on your website, which is cupcakesanddaisies.com, cupcakes and the letter N, daisies.com, you have, you know, my first 100 quilts, my second 100 quilts, and you have a nice little thumbnail of a portion of it and a link to all the details. You are so organized.
You know, that has just been such a nice benefit of starting a blog, that I've just had this great record keeping, because I keep, you know, I record the things that I do as I make a quilt, and then the last step when I finish a quilt is I'll show a picture of the finished quilt, and then I'll give the pattern, who designed it, what fabric I used, you know, how big it is, so that way, two or three years from now, someone stumbles across a quilt I made, they can go to my blog and get all the information, and if someone asks me a question, I've long forgotten that information, I have it available too.
Yeah, I really wish I had done this. I may have to just start today and just go backwards, because it is a great documentation tool, and it's gorgeous to flip through here and look at what you've done.
Thanks so much. Beautiful work.
You know, tell me a little bit about, I want to talk to you about your couple of your quilts, two specific ones. One is made the cover of the AQS calendar for 2016. It's called Coastal Lily, and this is something that you entered in competition. Tell me about that process. What makes you decide to enter a quilt in a show?
Okay. Well, usually I will enter a quilt in a show that I think is different for some reason. For example, Coastal Lily, I didn't design that pattern. It's a Minnikin Simpson pattern, mm-hmm. but it's in the Minnikin Simpson colorway, you know, the pattern.
Right.
I changed it up a little bit by kind of going with more of a V and Company or Bonnie and Camille type of colors.
Mm-hmm.
So that in itself really changed the look of the pattern of the quilt. And then whenever I had it quilted, Judy Madsen did the quilting, and then she did quilting on it that was really unique and that I had never seen before. So I don't really start out thinking I'm going to make a show quilt, but sometimes my quilts just turn into show quilts.
And so while this was happening, did you, once you had the top, did you think, okay, I want to have some fabulous quilting? Or were you already planning to have that done by Judy?
Well, that was kind of just a fluke, too, because Judy and I just keep in contact, and whenever she has time, she just kind of works a quilt I've made into her schedule. And Coastal Lily is the third quilt that she would have quilted for me. So she just calls me and says, hey, Thelma, your name's coming up. Do you have anything that you'd like me to quilt? And I said, well, I've just finished this Coastal Lily that I think's kind of fun, and we follow each other's blogs. And she goes, oh, I was hoping you would say that. And so, yeah, so, and after, like I said, this was the third quilt that she had quilted mm-hmm. for me, so I pretty much just let Judy do what she wants to do because she has some really great and creative ideas. So that's how Coastal Lily came together. It was all just a fluke.
Just this, I think it's an extraordinary quilt. I mean, from the color to the execution, and it won an award, right?
Yes, yes, it won first place at Paducah, which I live not very far to Paducah from Paducah, and I go to the quilt show every year. So anytime I have a quilt just in the show, I'm just so excited. And this was the fifth quilt that had been accepted into the show. And when they announced that it won, I just couldn't believe it. I just because I'm a quilter, I'm
yes.
not a professional. I just couldn't imagine winning. So it was the thrill of a lifetime, definitely.
Yeah, I love that show because there are so many people that it's a meaningful show for them. So they'll enter something special that they've done for themselves. And it's extraordinary. People do extraordinary work. And so it's exciting to see just somebody's name maybe that shows up that you've never heard of before. So that's congratulations. And then the calendar, it's so cool.
Oh, yeah. When they called and asked, they asked
yeah.
my permission. Would you mind if we put your picture of your quilt on the cover of our calendar? I'm like, oh, my gosh. So everybody in my family, that's what they're getting for Christmas.
That sounds good. Just put a sticker on it. You know, here you go. That's like... So the other thing that I wanted to talk about, a quilt that you did, was the Red and White Tribute exhibit in New York City where the book just came out. Do you have your copy of the book?
Yes. It's 350 pages of red and white wonderfulness.
I know. It's just, you know, you hyperventilate just opening it, especially if you were there, you know, and you went to the event. How many days did you go?
I did not get to go to the event,
oh,
believe it
did
or not. I created that quilt just based on the pictures and the enthusiasm and the excitement that was generated online from the show.
Ah, so I got to go for a day, basically. I mean, you know, to the show for a full day. So you decided, because all of this was just, you know, it was a short exhibit that was done in New York City, a single lady's collection. Her husband put the exhibit on as a birthday present, and they're all red and white. So when you saw all that happening, when did you decide you wanted to make a tribute to the exhibit?
Well, just a lot of people online were just picking out different quilts that they like, and they were mm-hmm. making them. But it was hard for me just to pick one, so I kind of thought it would be fun. What if I combined several of them that I liked into one? So it would kind of give you the feel that you were walking into and seeing the exhibit. So that's kind of what my red and white quilt looks like, and there's more detail on my blog. But I tell you, that was my biggest math challenge because I had to, you know, completely come up with the math for each individual quilt that's in it. And I was so amazed and so pleased when all the pieces fit together.
So when you design something like that, Thelma, we have about 2 minutes left. So when you design something like that, you know, you do have it as a whole title thing on the top. People can click over. But did you use graph paper? Do you use a computer?
Yeah, I'm pretty much just a pencil and graph paper kind of girl. So I kind of just decided on the different pieces I wanted to make. And then I kind of just had to, you know, scale down the different sizes to kind of get it all to fit. But it was really, I kind of just went with two or three different things, different pieces at a time. And then it just kind of slowly came together. It was a summer's work, but it was nothing but fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. Because there, how many quilts did you actually replicate into one quilt?
Oh, let's see. That's a really good question. I bet there's at least a dozen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
some of them are parts of them. Some are, you know, and they're all traditional. So it's not like you were trying to figure out some fancy applique thing. So it's a traditional patchwork.
Yeah. There were a lot of quilts that I loved that I would have liked to have incorporated into it. But, yeah, mm-hmm. they were a lot to bite off and then to kind of shrink down. So I kind of went with some of the easier ones. But, you know, red and white quilts, they all look great.
Oh, they do. They absolutely do. I know that you and I wanted to just give a shout out to people who love to share pictures about the things that they find on the internet, because your pictures are so amazing. I'm sure they're shared a lot. What is a good tip, a good guideline, so being sure people can get back to who the original quilt maker was?
Would just like to say that I think it's great when people copy or you're, you know, are inspired by other quilters, but it's so disappointing when they don't mention where they get their inspiration. And sometimes it's pretty obvious to see where they got their inspiration. So I just think it would be great if whenever people either enter a quilt in a show or they are talking about it online, if they just say, hey, you know, I was inspired by Thelma Childers. They don't even have to mention, you know, my blog or anybody, or even I was looking at this red and white, you know, quilt book, and I was inspired by it. Or even, it could be a whole book, it could be just anything, but just whatever inspired, if it didn't come completely out of your head, I think it's just nice to share, don't you think?
Yes, it's a wonderful practice to say where you were inspired by a colorway or design, if you're using a designer's or a quilt maker like you, Thelma, who you are very good at always attributing where your original, if you had an idea that was inspired by somebody. So that is amazing. I thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah. So, Thelma, this has been a lot of fun to have you come on and share about your work. What just in 5 seconds, what are you working on right now?
Right now I'm doing some market sewing for some designers, so that's all I can say.
Oh, okay. So there, you're keeping busy with that. That comes up in a few weeks. Ah,
yes.
Very short. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, again, thanks for including me. You said the time would go fast, and it has.
It has.
I hope the people listening think so.
We'll be right back after the break.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am really excited to find a new-to-me designer earlier this year. And just her work is incredibly sweet, and it speaks to me like crazy. And so Aaliyah Lutz is working with the fabric company Penny Rose. She is an illustrator and has moved into the world of fabric, which we are so thrilled about. Hi, Aaliyah. How are you?
Hi, Pat. How are you?
I am so glad to see you and hear you talk to you. You know, not seeing you, but, you know.
Well, I'm so glad to see you or hear you too.
Yes.
You know, I've been a big fan of yours for the longest time.
So how long have you been doing your artwork professionally? Well, you know, you do fabric now, but you've been doing lots of things.
Yeah, I did. I started packaging design, and I had a company before doing a lot of the similar styles since 1997. So it's been a while.
So describe your style, because I can pick it out now when I see it. It's like so distinct.
Thank you. Yeah, I would describe it as very colorful. I love to include a lot of charming illustrations of animals like bunnies and bears and things like that. And I also have a big love for florals, rose prints, things like that. But I'd say there's a lot of sweet things mixed in with lots of color, I think would kind of sum it up. But definitely also the vintage style. I really, mm-hmm. really love that. It takes me back to my childhood, and it just has great memories attached to it for me. So I'd say all those things kind of sum up my style. But it's great that you say you can identify it. That's neat to hear.
Yeah, the your little figures and things remind me of a very updated, like, 30s prints, mm-hmm. you know. So they're not – definitely you can tell it's not from the 30s because it's fresh and it's clean lined, but it has that really nice – I like you have, like, little puppies by your newsletter for sign up, and that is so mm-hmm. cute. I just like to look on your site, and you have an aqua typewriter that shows up like on the rolling thing. And I'm like, oh, I want one of those.
Thanks. Yeah. But I am a big fan of the 30s, and I draw a lot of inspiration from those prints. It, you know, they're just so cute, and the color palette and everything. I mean, it's lovely. So you do see a lot of that sort of sprinkled in for sure.
So when did you decide, or how did you, you know, come about doing the fabric for Penny Rose, which is a Riley Blake collection company?
Yeah. So interestingly, I had a company that I started in 1997 called Nostalgia, and it was actually a bath product line, but I did a lot of the similar prints, and I had met some of the folks from that work now for Riley Blake, and they had introduced me to the owners there, and we got connected last summer. And you know, it had been a long time dream of mine to do fabric, because I had started producing small batches of it with that line before. And so when we got connected and made it happen, it was really like a dream of mine. So that's kind of how it happened, but just kind of that connection, and then having your work out there and circulating obviously was the starting point to it all, but that connection, and then just I think the right fit for Penny Rose mm-hmm. made it kind of happen.
So tell me a little bit about how you develop a fabric line. Maybe we could talk about your Christmas one. That was how I found out about your work with the sew-along that was using your fabric and a pattern.
Yeah. So the way I go about designing a fabric line usually starts, let's say for the Christmas line, for example. I am infatuated with Pinterest because I love that you can develop like a mood board on mm-hmm. there. And that's usually how I start all my fabric collections. I create lots of inspiration, or I pin lots of inspiration.
Yeah.
I used to do it all by hand, literally on my walls. I would put all together my ideas and put them on like my walls or on a board. But with the great technology of Pinterest, I do it on there. And so that's how I start a lot of my collections. By putting all my ideas into one place, even just colors and things like that. And then from there, I start to sketch it out, and that just gives me the freedom to really think through, like, how a collection would work together and the scale of prints and kind of the balance of the whole collection. Mm-hmm. And once I have the sketching done, I can pull it into – I use Illustrator to fine-tune all of my art. and that kind of, that's sort of the rough process, mm-hmm. but it takes me a while. It's a few months of work to put it all together. Yeah.
Do you have an idea when you're going in, when you start developing your mood board, do you think, oh, I want to work with these colors, or I want to work with this theme or these images?
Yes and no. Well, for the Christmas line, obviously, I was looking for like those classic Christmas colors. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that's what I love to create things with. But sometimes like, for some things, I try to stretch myself a little bit because I tend to fall in love with pink a lot. So I try to look outside that pink box and think about, you know, maybe some new things that I can throw into the mix, some new colors that I can add into the palette. So, yeah, I mean, I don't always know when I go in exactly what colors, but that's where the mood board or the storyboard really helps me fine tune that stuff.
How do you think, like, a quilter who wanted to use fabric might develop a mood board? You know, like, maybe they have your collection, but they're really not sure what to make with it or how to use it. How would they – could they create a mood board for ideas?
Sure. I mean, you can pull in anything. Well, like on Pinterest, for example, you can create a board for anything. And one way that you could – you know, create a mood board is to pull in the fabric swatches that you can get off, you know, anyone that has an online store, or even you could scan them in and start thinking about patterns that you want to use with the fabric, maybe applique templates that you've seen. You can pull all those ideas together, maybe embroidery floss, like a color that you think would match, and kind of get all your ideas into one place before you make your final decisions, for example. And also Pinterest, and all around the web, obviously, allpeoplequilt.com is a great source for this too, mm-hmm. is all the different free tutorials and patterns that are available. You can pull a lot of those things, pin them right into your board.
That's an excellent idea, because the magazine has so many patterns out there. So you could just scan through there and then just save the ones that look like they'll work for the fabric line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perfect.
I do that a lot. Yeah. Or if I see something online that I'm like, oh, I want to make that, then I will pin it and save it for later so I don't forget.
Yeah. Now we have large boards out there of all these ideas.
Yes, I do. Oh my goodness.
You have a great little tutorial that you put up for everybody on your website. And your website is ELEALUTZdesign.com.
Elea. Correct.
Yeah,
yes,
your name.
I put it up today for your readers, and it's on my blog. So it's it's a scrappy ornament tutorial, and it's, you know, you can't do it wrong, so that's what I love about it. It's fast, mm-hmm. and you just basically sew a few coordinating fabrics together and pull them through. I use a 3-inch embroidery hoop, which they're really small and cute, perfect for like a tree ornament, or you could even use it for a gift tag.
Oh,
and you pull those through the hoop, and I mean, it's really quick. It's literally like a 10-minute project, which is what's fun about it. And you can also jazz it up a little bit with embroider a name on it, or, you know, I stamped Believe on mine and did some embroidered details on there. So, yeah, there's a lot of possibilities, but I did add that, and that is up and ready today.
Oh, that's great. The leaves, are they fused? Because they're three-dimensional.
They are, yeah. They are, and then I just used pinking shears to trim the edges, and that's optional too. But I did like how it kind of hid the fastener of the hoop a little mm-hmm. bit.
Yeah, yeah. Clever. You're very clever.
That's thanks.
So I want to be sure we get this in because we have about 2 minutes or so here. Is that you have a brand new, besides the sew along for your Christmas line, you have that was done is now a pattern that can be purchased. You have a new book coming out.
I do. Yes, I'm so excited. It is called Pretty Playtime Quilts, and I am. It's being published with It's So Emma, mm-hmm. and that is available for pre-order now. But it doesn't come out until spring I believe like around March time, March 2016.
Okay.
And that is available for pre-order at the Facts Workshop right now.
Yay.
But yes, very exciting.
And what will be in it? What kind of projects?
There's six projects, and there's really something for everyone, but it's definitely for the young and young at heart. There's lots of charming things in there. One of my favorites is a tooth fairy pillow that I had started designing for my own kids, like a year ago, and a table runner, and there's several quilts from mini quilts to even like a full size, I believe it's a twin size quilt that we did. Yeah. So there's small projects in there, and then there's some full size quilts too. And there's a gorgeous sampler quilt that has a little sprinkling of everything from the book in it too. It'll be on the cover. So it's fun. I'm excited.
So what's your next fabric line that will come out in the stores that people can look for?
I just started to kind of give previews of a new fabric line that'll be out in spring too, and it's called Strawberry Biscuit.
Ah.
That'll be available over April 2016. Yeah.
Wonderful. Aaliyah, this has been so much fun to get to know you better, and I adore your work. I just adore it.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. Thank you.
Well, everybody can come and visit, and you have a newsletter they can sign up for. And thank you again.
Thank you, Pat.
We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish, learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I want to tell you that this show is sponsored by Moda Fabrics. So you want to go out and check out the Moda Bake Shop, where there's all kinds of patterns you can download, and swatches. Aaliyah was talking about loading swatches, so anytime that you're doing that, there's all those out on the Moda website. So the second half of the show is going to be really fun. We're going to have I'm going to have Becky Goldsmith here, and from the Piece of Cake Designs, and we're going to talk really detailed about a couple of different things. So we have the whole half of a show to work on that. Becky, thank you for coming on again the show. I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate the invitation. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. You and Linda Jenkins, who is your partner for Piece of Cake, have been out and about for many years. I've known you a long time. And you guys do like so much exciting work. Now, you're still traveling to teach, right?
Yes. Yes, I am.
So
often.
Often, yes. Yeah, that's what I thought. You or Becky is out on the road often, and Linda is holding down the fort with designing. And so today we're going to talk about some of the things you've been doing, and a project you've done together and a project you've done by yourself. So the first one, let's talk about the wool one. What do you think?
I love it. I do. This is a book that started out as Linda's idea. She really wanted to work with wool, mm-hmm. and she convinced me that it was a really good idea, and it is.
You know what I love about you two is that you will take something that people are doing and you come at it. You both do this. You come at it with a fresh approach. You come at it with the piece of cake approach, you know, with the Becky and Linda approach. And the wool is no different.
No, it really isn't. What it is an interesting, deeply colored, very forgiving fabric. And if you treat it, you know, with that in mind, the way you would approach almost any other fabric, keeping in mind that you have to sew it differently, it's fun. It's especially fun in applique.
You know, I've worked with wool when I first started designing because I designed in a primitive and folk arts color way, and that was
right.
What wool was. It was, you know, you didn't find turquoise wool. It just didn't exist then. But your color palette, my color palette has changed a lot. It's not that anymore. But your color palette is clear, playful, bright, fun. And your cover has wool that's turquoise, which...
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we were lucky to find it. And a lot of the wool that we get now comes from In the Patch. And Phyllis Myring, who owns In the Patch, she dyes some really beautiful colors.
Yeah, and the great thing, too, is that you work with putting it with regular cottons that everybody already has, and not just cottons that are tonal. You have got patterned, fabric there, which is, I just think, I've never seen that, and I love it.
Well, I'm glad you've never seen it. I suppose it didn't occur to us to do anything differently.
Right.
Because it's what we do. We do like to work with a lot of pattern. And
yeah.
So it makes sense to play to the strengths of the cotton fabric.
Yeah, I mean, just the cover itself is on a newsprint background with the turquoise wool and lime green stems. I mean, it is just the most gorgeous color. The book's called Wool Applique, The Piece of Cake Way. So let's talk a bit of detail, Becky. Tell me about the type of wool the two of you explored and now like to use, because there's different types of wool.
Right. We like felted wool cloth. Right. So you begin with wool that's woven and then it's felted, as opposed to wool felt, which has a completely different hand and it doesn't seem to hold together as well. So we like a nicely felted wool.
And it's 100% wool. So it's all.
It is 100% wool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if it's not 100% wool, it's not going to felt as well.
Right. Right. I mean, you can do a little bit of percentage off, but like the material that's really felt with some wool in it, that is the kind that has the totally different properties. So
yeah, we don't like that.
So are you ever using wool right off the bolt, or are you mostly buying hand dyes?
We mostly buy hand dyes. And to be honest, it's what we can find. And we don't need that much, you know, for these projects. Wool is not, you just don't need yards of the stuff. You know, you need a whole lot of small pieces.
Right. That's funny because, you know, it's true. I mean, when I did a lot with wool, you could even buy yardage. I mean, they did have the bolts,
no.
The suiting and stuff. But yeah, it comes in small packages and you can collect the pretty colors. So let's talk about what stitch you like to use. Do you do it all by hand, wool applique, or are you doing any machine?
We do. We machine quilted, but with the wool, we like a blanket stitch. And one of the things that's in the book one of the things that we thought was important was giving relatively detailed instructions for how to do a blanket stitch with wool at inner points and outer points so that you can preserve the point and hold the fabric in place. But yeah, we use a blanket stitch.
So what, you work a lot with overlays at one point in the work which you were doing. Do you use overlays for placement?
Oh, you mean a placement? Oh yeah.
Oh, placement overlay.
For those who don't know what that is, it's clear vinyl on which you trace the pattern, you place the vinyl over the top of the background block, and then when you're positioning your applique pieces, you slide it underneath the plastic, the vinyl, on top of your background. And you can do this whether you're fusing or whether you're positioning shapes to hand applique in a traditional manner. It gives you a really accurate way to place your pieces without having to draw on the background fabric or do any number of those other things that people sometimes do.
Yeah. Yeah, the lots of people, especially if you're doing something very symmetrical, they help to keep that all organized so that your final project is still symmetrical.
Well,
right?
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, I know as well as anyone else that you don't always have to get your pieces exactly where they go, except for those times when it's important that you get them exactly where they go. And so it's good to know how to do that for those times when you really need it.
So when you want to baste, what is your method of basting the wool applique shape to the background so it doesn't move around?
Actually, we're not big basters. And you need baste if you have to. But for the wool shapes, we fused these in place. And we're not big fusers typically. But fusing, especially the larger wool applique shapes, it helps to keep those outer edges from fraying, even though wool rarely frays. It does help, you know, if you've got one that wants to fray a little bit. And it holds, the fusible holds the wool in place nicely while you're working. Now, what we found was that it's not a bad idea to throw in the occasional pin if the if the fusible web doesn't hold as well as you think it, you know, as well as it should. But yeah, basting only if you have to.
Okay. So that's nice because it's a step then that you can eliminate for the most part. You don't need it that often.
Yeah. You know, and it's not that I never baste, but it's a pretty small part of what I do.
Yeah. So what type of thread do you like to work with? Because the wool is so fluffy for the most part, particularly after it's felted.
Well, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Well, there's a variety of really good threads out there. And for us, and the reason why we're using the blanket stitch rather than, say, a heavier embroidery stitch is because we want to keep the focus on the applique shape and not divert the focus away from the shape to the embroidery stitches. And besides, we're not really seriously into embroidery. It's not what we enjoy doing the most. So as far as thread goes, I have a huge amount of pearl cotton, and I like using it, and so does Linda. we don't use a size 8, which is pretty thick. For this, we gravitated toward the number 12 or the number 16 maybe, but I like the 12 better in the Presencia's pearl cotton. But there are other brands. There's Aurifil makes a wool thread that's very nice and blends right in. And in the patch has some wool thread that's hand-dyed that covers a lot of different colors. And I found myself using all of those.
So you switch it around. You're not like keeping just one style.
No. It depends on the look you want on any given shape. So if you're doing, if you're appliquing down a flower, you might want the thread to disappear. If you're appliquing a leaf, well, maybe you want the edges of the leaf to be more, to look more serrated or to stick out or, you know, so you've got to play with whether you're using a matching thread or a contrasting thread and how showy the thread is as opposed to how much you want it to blend in. Right. So all of these are personal choices.
Yeah, and you can always do a little test, right, to see, like, what you have. Yeah, does it look good? Do you like it? You know, most of us are so impatient, we don't want to test. But
well, you can, you know, there's nothing that says, let's say you get one something done and you decide to change the thread. Well, it might not be that big a deal to just change the thread and keep going.
Right. Yeah. So there's no rules on that. So we can just kind of.
I'm not making any.
Well, that's good.
No, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I'm all for people doing what they want to do.
Yeah. Before we end this particular segment, we have about 2 minutes. So I want you to tell me about putting you've appliqued cotton on top of your wool, which is one of the things that's on the cover. It's a stem that's over top of a petal or a leaf and a vein on it. Can you tell me the technique, because the wool is thick, so now you're putting cotton on top.
Well, the applique that we do in those circumstances and often all together with the wool is not done with an invisible stitch because it's too fussy. It doesn't work well with the wool. Mm-hmm. What we're doing is we did a whole book on this stitch called Applique with Attitude. And mostly what you do, you prepare the applique piece with a turn under allowance. You can still use your needle to turn the seam allowance under, but instead of doing an invisible stitch, what I did here on this is a running stitch near the fold, but not at the fold, very near the fold, a running stitch with pearl cotton. And so you make sure that the stitch is small enough and tight enough to hold the applique shapes to the quilt. You know, you don't want it loose. But it doesn't have to be fussy. It's both functional and decorative.
Now, are you going through the wool and into the background? So you're anchoring that that
as
piece?
Much as I can.
Okay.
Yeah, as much as I can. But you know, the wool is thick, and so sometimes you can, and sometimes you can't.
Right.
If I feel like it needs it, every now and then I might do a stick and stab stitch just to pull it down, but not usually.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Did you have to revert to that sometimes? Because actually, sometimes certain pieces of wool are pretty thick. Maybe just don't pick that one.
That's absolutely true. Yeah. But no, mostly I didn't have to do the stick and stab with this.
Okay. And now this book has several projects, right?
It's got a bunch.
They're all – is anything lap size or they're all pretty much wall or –
Oh, no. A lot of these are small because, bed quilts, we didn't do any bed quilty size things in this.
Okay.
No,
well,
because I don't know that you'd want to wash it in the washing machine with the wool hand applique to it.
Right. Yeah, that's a little. Well, we're going to take a break, Becky, and then we'll come right back and talk some more.
Okay.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm talking to Becky Goldsmith of Piece of Cake Design. So, Becky, you and Linda have both created a lot of what I would call classics, quilts that a lot of people have made because it spoke to so many of them. We collect them, like me, because I haven't made them yet.
That's a happy, happy thought.
Yes. So you told me you're working actually on a version of your North Pole quilt right now.
Well, actually, I was machine quilting the one that my mother made. She worked on it over the winter, not last year, but the year before. And last year, I didn't have time to get it quilted, but I just finished machine quilting it. It's a stitch. It really is.
That is.
Mom is 82, and she did exactly what she wanted to do, and it's just as quirky as it can be, and I love it.
What did it feel like to quilt your design that your mom had done?
Well, it was interesting.
but
I know Mom pretty well. So,
right.
You know, I quilted it to suit her and to hold everything down. She's 83 now, and I mean, she was making this stuff up as she went along. She
she
mostly generally followed the pattern, but
mostly generally,
yeah. So a lot of the quilting was also to help everything stay structurally secure, and it will. And it's pretty perky. I'm going to post pictures on the blog. She's adding embellishments now.
Oh, okay.
It's cracking me. Oh, my goodness. It's cracking me up.
Well, I can't wait to see it.
Oh, yeah.
So the other thing we are going to talk about, is that, you know, you can't just have one book we're going to talk about. No, we have to have two. So,
good.
Yeah. So you wrote a book yourself, The Quilter's Practical Guide to Color. And you do, Becky, you have the most gorgeous color sense. I just think that when you put something together, when you and Linda work on things, it is just amazing. Is that why you wrote the book, to sort of put down your thoughts about how you work?
Yes. I have been lecturing about color for more than 10 years, and this book was a direct outgrowth from that lecture. Because the more I talked about it, the more I realized I wanted to share what I knew, which is a practical guide. It's not heavy on color theory, because I don't consider myself to be a color theorist. I just have a pretty good idea about how to make things work together.
Yeah. And you have a little thing that I read in there that about magic.
Yeah, it isn't magic. Too many people are afraid to use color, and they think that, you know, only those people over there do it well, but for some reason they're lacking. That just isn't true. It is so not magic. There's things you can learn, and there's tools you can use, and a lot of it, too, is deciding what you like and paying attention to how you put together the things that you like.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would you recommend? Because I know, I mean, you teach a lot, so you talk to a lot of people about this, you know, encountering them and speaking to them, you know, in their environment when you have fabric and you can do demos and stuff. So what is one sort of tip you can give us to getting over a hurdle of color, maybe a fear people have?
Well, if you're getting ready to start a project and you don't know where to begin, and you don't have, you know, a lot of people start with a photograph and they want to copy the photograph. And there's nothing wrong with that, as long as they also understand that the fabric in the photograph is long gone. They're going to have to make substitutions.
Right.
But if they've got no inspiration at all and they're just looking at a pattern and they don't know where to start, they should do what I was doing when you called me. And that is go to your closet, pull out one or two fabrics that you like the looks of, or a color. Like, I pulled a stack of whites and grays and this wonderful blue that might look really good with it. And I don't exactly know where it's going yet. I know what project I need to make, but I've pulled those into the studio and I'm just looking at them and I'm throwing other stuff with it. I know that it's really easy to throw too much together. You know, to try and throw together every color that you like, when in fact, if you look at quilts that are successful, they don't always have every color in the rainbow in them. You know, so it's important to limit, to make good editorial choices. And if you've got a stack that's growing and it's looking good together, and you're unsure about something that's in it, and you take it out and you really miss it. This mm-hmm. is the thing I learned in a Ruth McDowell class. If you miss it when it's gone, you maybe need to put it back.
Yeah, that's a good tip. That's a good tip because you have like that gut feeling, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
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 I had a chance once. I know you will not remember this, but I had a chance once to watch you shopping for a few minutes because we were both teaching in Tennessee.
I remember
when we did the Pigeon Forge.
And oh yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. So I there was doing something. There was like an author table or something. There was this thing going on the one night, and you were shopping in the booth right across from me. And, you know, so I for like 10 minutes, whatever it was. So
yeah.
I just found it fascinating because I didn't have anybody there yet. So I was just watching you pick bolts and lay them out. When you are at an event like that, do you just go with a gut reaction and add to your collection? Because you don't have a large collection of fabric, do you?
No, I don't. In fact, it gets smaller all the time. I think it's a fallacy to imagine that having a huge number of choices makes your life easier. It really doesn't. Having a narrower band of choices is, I find, better. So when I shop, it's all gut feeling because I can't say I always shop for case facets, although I do look at always at the case. You know, I don't always shop any one designer. I just go up and down, and it might be a reproduction, and it might be new, and it might be a dot, or it might be a plaid. No, I just, I kind of know. And I know what I've used up. You know, if I've got holes in my collection at home, I know as I use something up what I need to grab.
Right. And your book, The Quilter's Practical Guide to Color, you do a lot of discussion about the fabric and the patterns and how to think about them. It's really, really nice.
Well, thank you. I think too many people don't understand the fabric they buy and why they gravitate toward it. Mm-hmm. I separate it into predictable and unpredictable fabric. And a predictable fabric is one that you look at the fabric, and whether it's a 6-inch piece or a 2-inch piece, and sometimes even smaller or bigger, the pattern is still recognizable. So that's obvious with a solid or a tone-on-tone or a polka dot. But there's a huge number of patterns out there that, well, okay, so back to it. The solids and the tone-on-tones and tiny prints, obviously predictable fabrics, and that's, if you look at your stash, most people have a huge number of those because they're safe. They are safe.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of prints. If you just take the time maybe to take one of those windows where you've cut it out, say a 2-inch square or a 3-inch square, and you look at a slightly larger print, you'll realize that when you cut those up, they still look, they have the same texture, they have the same attitude, they have the same movement, whether they're cut small or large. And it's that texture and movement that can really add a lot to your quilt.
Yeah, that is, you know, it's so you. I just love that. It's like...
Well, it was really interesting to me because I didn't realize that that's what I thought until I started writing about it.
Yeah.
And then I realized that, no, I've always done this by instinct, but that's why.
Yeah. And the one section I'm looking at right now in the book is called Auditioning for Applique Quilts. And I think when I saw the work that you and Linda did way back when I first was introduced to it, you really motivated me to use prints for backgrounds and use multiple fabrics for backgrounds under applique. And this particular audition page, you're showing there's like fabric with clocks on it and leaves.
Oh, yeah. I love that quilt. It's called TikTok. And the whole quilt started with that. It's a linen with those retro clocks on it. And they're big. They're big clocks.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun.
It is so neat because there you have it without the applique and then with the applique. So people can clearly see what that does and how it works. And it's fabulous.
Well, thank you.
You also have all these tip boxes, which are really neat. What is one of your favorite tips boxes from the book?
Oh, gosh. Well, I didn't pick one of them because I like them all. You know, really, really, I like them all. I do, because I know what people do when they pick up a book like this. And I'm as bad as anybody else. They'll gravitate to something like that that's small and digestible. And so what I like about the tip boxes in general is that they distill the information in the book, but you should still read the rest of the words, because the rest of the words are, you know, they're not too bad.
Right. It's very good. I mean, the book is very good.
Thank you.
And you also have patterns, so they help you explore. You know, you can learn about, like, one of the things and then explore it via the patterns. So it's has patterns as well.
There's actually a lot of patterns in here for a book that is not completely pattern heavy. I mean, the idea is it's a book on color. So I was really pleased that we could squeeze in as many quilts as we did.
Yeah, including TikTok.
Meaning me and my editor. She managed to make things fit.
So I will have like maybe 30 seconds. What are you working on right now? What kind of quilt besides your mom's?
I'm working on an applique quilt that I'm trying to name. And let me tell you, it is the hardest thing in the world to come up with a good name.
Yeah.
But this one's applique. It's the blocks are similar. That means they'll feel like something I normally do, but they're not. They're different enough to be pretty interesting. Yeah, it'll be nice.
Is it a big quilt?
Big. It's about 62 by 70, but it's made up of blocks that you could take one block and do whatever you want with it.
Ah, okay. Well, everybody can visit you out at peaceocake.com, where you have a newsletter and your blog and videos. You have lots and lots of great videos.
Thank you.
Yeah. And tell Linda I said hi.
I will. Okay. I should be talking to her in the next few days.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Becky, for being here.
Thank you, Pat. I've enjoyed visiting with you.
This has been American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit us at allpeoplequilt.com, where you can look for Becky's work. She's a contributor to the magazines, and some of her work is out there on the website. And visit me at patsloan.com. Sign up for everybody's newsletters, because we want to be able to get to you and talk to you. We'll see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for